We'll do it live. Fuck it.
That's a good pause. Everybody, if you're listening, there was just a pause where I start the show, because I'm Mike Coughlin, joined with Matt Grady, as we do at least 2 weeks in a row now, which is more regular than your grandmother's shit, here at halfguarded.com for the show. And what we do, obviously, is I do as little as possible. Matt carries this shit. And even though I stopped drinking, I'm drinking tonight because today sucked. So, Matt, take it away.
All right. What first, you got to address, why did today suck?
Well, in the world of me, every good deed goes punished.
Okay.
In that I, as part of my regular day job, I'm actually, by the way, I have fights on in the background and I'm just watching Fyodor destroy Heath Herring. I remember the first time I saw this, it was just scary how hard Fyodor hit. Anyways, in my day job as a lawyer, a horrible profession filled with evil, evil people. I'm a what we call a solo practitioner, meaning I'm responsible for myself. And oftentimes I take these temporary gigs just that are just kind of like guaranteed income. I can come and go as I please, more or less. Like if I have my regular clients interfering, I don't have to be at the site to do work. It's just boring crap that any moron can do. But again, it's nice to have that kind of, you know, steady income, knowing that you're going to get so many dollars an hour if you want to. And the problem with that is that on a moment's notice, they'll be like, up, and the gig is over. And today, like, out of nowhere, they're just like, oh, thank you for everything you did. The gig is over. I'm like, well, thanks a lot, guys. Like, and I found this
out. How does that work? Do they tell you? Is it like a set amount of money you get, or you get paid by the hour, and then when they say you're done, they can just cut you with no notice?
Yep, you're a totally at-will independent contractor. You are by the Vince McMahon standard, pretty much. Like this morning, I didn't go into the job site like I would sometimes because I had one of my clients. She's a poor single mom, which seems to be most of my normal clients. And it sounds like I'm a saint, and I probably am, but it's really just who's available. And I went to court today for her, got her child support. I got her a lot of back child support that she was owed. It was a big, big victory. And I get home and I check my email, like, in the job that you're at, your normal gig has been canceled. And it's like, it's not like the end of the world or anything like that, because this is how it works. But it's kind of like, you know, you guys can't give me more than like 5 minutes notice. So just, you know, it's. And meanwhile, I take the morning off and I help a client where I will legitimately have to charge, like in Chicago, a lot of attorneys will charge like $300 an hour. I don't know how you can do that in good conscience. If I tell them I bill them at $150 an hour, I will then pretty much find a way to cut the hours in half because it's a poor single mom. And like, I don't want to take money from some fucking kid.
Right. I mean, if she's trying to get child support, obviously money is an issue.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll never let it go. I'll quit the profession or I'll die doing it. But this job means something different to me. I'll never let it go. I don't care. I know I'm naive. I know I'm stupid. I know this just makes me sound like I'm full of myself. But I just – John fucking Adams, one of the founding fathers of this country, for whatever flaws he had, when push came to shove, he represented British soldiers and gave them their day in court, and that is someone to admire. That's the kind of lawyer we should all pray exists in the world, someone that will do the right thing because he knows that the profession is bigger than today's politics. It's bigger than making a buck. I hate the commoditization of the law. I'm a big libertarian free market guy, blah, 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 blah. It's one thing if you're selling hoagies or, you know, Pokemon, but lawyers are totally different to me than almost any other profession because I can basically destroy someone's life, to quote Daredevil from season 2 on Netflix, with $6 in postage and a letter. Like, it doesn't take much for a lawyer to ruin somebody's entire life or at least fuck up 6 months of their life. And so few attorneys just you know, all they want to do is make a buck, and I know people need to make money, but, you know, fuck them. So anyways, we have fighting and stuff to talk about. Not my,
sure.
Not my pity party with vodka.
Okay. Kind of a lighter news week again, but I think there's some stuff we can dig into a little bit here.
There will be news because I am in the process of finalizing a column, and I'll break it down here a little bit. A year ago, about this time, halfguarded.com was the first people and pretty much the only ones to really break the story on the PED penalty scandal in the UFC. And I have something coming out pretty soon. I'll probably release it on Monday. And I think it's just as revolutionary and important to the sport of MMA.
Okay, something to look forward to. Why Monday?
Because the weekends people don't read things.
Yeah, it's weird. I feel like people would have time off and be able to read stuff. It's weird how that works, isn't it?
They go to barbecues and whatever. I feel like Monday, here's some inside baseball for people. I do not time this website for myself on Central Time. I time it for two time zones, London and New York City. I traditionally try to have something posted at about 3 a.m. my time, because that's 9 a.m. in London. And then I always want something, if I have anything else, the last time I'll really push anything is 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, because that's when people are getting off work. And I figure people check the internet when they go get into work in the morning, right before they leave, and sometime around lunch. And,
right.
You know. Yeah, I put way more thought into this shit than is probably necessary, but
it'd be interesting to see if somebody just went to the site once a day and saw all three articles at once. It wouldn't really matter when you posted the three. You could post them all at 9 a.m. and it wouldn't make a difference. But
as long as
you're getting multiple visits, yeah, it makes sense obviously to spread them out.
Yeah, as long as I get stuff out before the 4 p.m. deadline for me, that's all I really care about. But we do actually have several, I know, known repeat listeners. Davey something or another who comments a lot. He's a great human being. And I'll say this, sometime during this month, which is just the 13th month of the site, we will have visitor number 1 million on the site.
That's exciting. That's a big number.
Like, I don't even know how the fuck that happened. We had 4,000 in our first month, and now we're going to have our millionth. And it's all due pretty much to my brother and admin Tony. Because they know how to make this thing work, and the rest of us are just a bunch of jack-offs writing about whatever we want to write about.
All right. So, obviously, last Saturday, it was UFC Fight Night Salt Lake City. It's probably old news now, but anything jump out at you from that show?
I did actually cover most of the anything important on my last podcast, the Walkabout Edition I did with the dogs, which was terrible audio, really terrible audio, just the quality sucked. As a show overall, I remember the first four fights were really good. In general, if you just recorded the show or watched it and went to halfguarded.com and saw whether I recommended something or not, you'd be very happy. The main event, Yair Rodriguez and Al Caceres, didn't need to go five rounds. It was fine, but three rounds and five rounds, nothing changed. Marina Moroz, I thought, was incredibly disappointing, given that she's fighting somebody on short notice, and she legitimately looked like she was two weight classes bigger, and this is at 115 pounds. Like, and she just coasted with jabbing and just keeping it at bay. And it was just, I thought it was just not the kind of performance you want to have when you're fighting a chick that would almost legitimately, and I'm not kidding, be considered a midget or little person or whatever by a dwarf. She'd be a dwarf, I think, by medical standards. The Fight Pass show was great. Most of the undercard was good. There were a few stinkers. We had an amazing, amazing high kick of death, which just was like scary dead, like Mirko Krokop in his prime. So, you know, I mean, it was the most violence has happened in Salt Lake City since the Mormons showed up and probably killed the Indians. So it's good. Good. Whatever is there, and I'm better than doing nothing on a Saturday.
All right. All right. So let's move to more current stuff here. We've got UFC. We're going to move way ahead up to October now. UFC 204. There is almost a main event for that show. It's been verbally agreed to by both fighters. Michael Bisping versus Dan Henderson for the middleweight title of the world. Would you disagree that this could be the worst middleweight title fight of all time from a skill standpoint?
Oh, that's interesting.
Not from a draw.
Right.
Not as a draw. Because I don't think it's good drawing either. But from, you're talking a guy in Bisping who nobody thought would even sniff the title at this point in his career, in his mid to late 30s at this point, probably most people think he's seen his better days. He would argue against that, obviously. Then you've got Dan Henderson, who's going to be 46 when he takes this fight and has gone 3-6 in his last 9 with the 3 wins against a probably washed up Shogun. Tim Bosch and a welterweight coming off a loss and a steroid failure and a bad beating from Neil Magny in Hector Lombard. I am not a fan of this fight in any way. And I mean, I'm usually the type who argues for a fight like this, but to me, they're really pushing the envelope with this one. What do you think?
All right. Ask me again after I answer the first question part about whether I like the idea of it as a draw. From a pure fight perspective, is it the weakest middleweight title fight skill-wise? That's really interesting because Anderson Silva had some fights against, like, you know, Patrick Ote, and Patrick Ote is not as good as either one of these two. But Anderson Silva obviously was so great that he would swing the bar in the favor. This is really low as far as skill level concerned. The only middleweight fights that immediately jump out to me, and the only reason I would say it's not the lowest ever, is because Rich Franklin beat Nate Quarry, and I think that overall,
yeah, that knockout,
and that it was an amazing knockout, but that was a title fight, and I think that in aggregate, these two probably have a little bit more skill than that. Probably more than Rich Franklin and David Loazzo, who fought in the main event of the show when George St. Pierre and BJ Penn first fought UFC 50-something or another. So, but I mean, again, we're talking bottom 5, I would say, all time. Again, and it's weird to say it because Bisping's very skilled. He's looked good in his fights. Even when he loses, he's looked good. I don't think he's past his prime. I don't think that he's, totally gone or anything like that.
Me neither. But I still think those top 4 guys usually beat him. Weidman, the Rockhold, the Romero, and Jacare crew. That like fearsome foursome. I think they usually would beat Bisping. Not easily, but I see them winning against him most of the time.
Yeah.
I don't look at him as the champion and the best guy in the division.
No, neither do I. I really think that the best guy overall in the division is probably Weidman. I'm not a Rockhold fan. I think Rockhold is very dependent on athleticism and really just like a really great left kick, oddly enough. But yeah, all those 4 I would favor against both of them. Henderson is such an outlier just because of his freak power. Like, I would think that he would lose to all 4 of the top guys. At the same time, if he knocked him out with one punch, I wouldn't be surprised. Whereas with Bisping, if he beat any of the top 4, I'd be like, I guess obviously except for, Rockhold, I'd be like, really? Holy crap, I can't believe that happened. So, I mean, yeah, from an in-ring standpoint, it's not the greatest. That said, at least they're both kind of on the same level, so it should be somewhat competitive.
Yeah. I mean, how do you feel about it as a draw? I mean, we were going to touch on that too.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's Henderson's never been a huge draw. I think there's a clamoring for him right now because most people know it's the end of the road for him. He's going to be 46. But if you really look at his record late in the last 4 or 5 years, it's not pretty. Like I said earlier, he's 3-6 in his last 9 with the wins against Shogun, Bosch, and Lombard. It's not a good run he's on by any stretch. He's been knocked out a bunch. And I mean, he just, to me, in a lot of the fights, he said he's looked pretty slow and listless. Granted, some of them he was fighting at 205 and getting thrown around by Cormier and, Rashad and stuff. But, as far as being the top draw in the division, I could see Weidman drawing as well. I mean, and granted, Weidman's not a huge draw either, but, I mean, how many pay-per-views has Dan Henderson sold in his career? You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's funny. If anybody else besides Michael Bisping was champion, this fight doesn't happen. This fight is a draw because of UFC 100 and because the knockout that Henderson delivered to Bisping is one of the most famous knockouts in the history of the sport. It's one of the most iconic. And that knockout, I mean, it's amazing to think that basically about 4 seconds in time is probably more valuable than everything that Chris Weidman's ever done in his career. Because when I, you know, when the rumor first started about this fight, I thought, oh, I want to see that. Like, there's something about these two going at it. Whereas, you know, Weidman or even a Rockhold rematch or Jacare or Romero, who are all really great fighters, steroids or not, Romero. Actually, and Jacare, and probably Weidman, and they're all on the gas. We can say that because no one's listening to this shit.
Right. Well, the Diaz brothers already said it, and so did McGregor.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
They're all on steroids.
I think that the what makes a fight so interesting to me and compelling is what we kind of talked about just now, in that neither one of them are that great. And so they kind of match up well. We have that incredible story. They had, you know, that big rivalry on the Ultimate Fighter season. I think that was three was when Bisping won it. Five, maybe? That was five was Penn and Jens Pulver, whatever season it was. And they had all that build up and trash talk, and it was really great. Obviously, the great knockout. But more than that, I really want to see this fight because no matter what happens, no matter who wins, I'll be happy. If Bisping wins, I've seen Bisping as a guy that he's kind of a dick, but I'm really happy for him winning the title because I do genuinely believe that he's been clean his entire career. He fights very intelligently. He's someone I think that has overcome a lot of other people who have incredible natural physical gifts. And on the other hand, you have Dan Henderson at 46. It's like he's never, for all of his accomplishments, all the Pride championships and everything, blah, 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 when he won the Pride middleweight title or when he won the Pride light heavyweight title, at neither time did anybody look at those belts and think that is the greatest in the world. They were secondary titles. He's never actually won the truly biggest belt in his sport. So either Henderson wins the big one, Bisping gets a notch on his belt, avenges a loss, and I kind of root for him as being like this weird underdog champion. And especially being at home, it'll be a really cool moment. So either you're going to have the really cool moment of Michael Bisping defending his championship in front of his home country, which will be crazy, or Dan Henderson finally achieving his lifelong dream, becoming the greatest in the world, likely retiring afterwards. There's more of a story as opposed to, you know, Chris Weidman comes in and Weidman will probably fight another 10 years and win and lose a title 2 or 3 times.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, the one interesting aspect of this, both guys, Bisping and Henderson, are both claiming that they did not request this fight. It was offered to them by the UFC, which is interesting because, I mean, in most cases, it's not every time, but in most cases in title fights, they book the top guy to fight the champion most times, unless there's an injury or something, or they've fought before, whatever the scenario might be. But usually the title fights are the top two guys going at it. In this case, Henderson's ranked 13th. And it's like,
holy shit. I didn't realize it was that low. Okay. Since they've had official rankings, without looking it up, I guarantee that is the lowest ranked fighter to ever fight for a world title.
Yeah. Unless you're talking like Joe Soto on one day's notice or something. But yeah.
I bet Soto was higher ranked than 13.
I think that was his first fight in the UFC or something.
And he's still higher than 13. So yeah, that's, also they're, I could see where Bisping didn't request it, but Dan Henderson, everybody in the world, in theory, has like an outstanding request to fight the champion. So whatever.
True. True. But the other question is, so obviously it's not based on merit. You can't with a straight face argue that Henderson's getting the title shot based on merit, that he's the best, second best middleweight in the world and has knocked the door down and got this title shot. He's coming off a win against Hector Lombard, who just got destroyed in his fight before at a lower weight class. So you can't argue that. So then the argument with the UFC mindset would be, is this going to make a lot more money? And I'm not even sure if it is. I think they just like the storyline. The company likes it. A lot of fans do. And maybe it'll draw a lot better than a Weidman fight. But would Weidman and Bisping in MSG draw? Probably. But anyway, we've probably beat this to death.
Well, that's true. But I will say that there, I think in terms of drawing, there's the idea of the immediate draw of a fight, which is obviously how many people buy it that day, but there is something to a long-term effect and solidifying Bisping's legend and reputation in England has, I think, a lot of value, not just for Bisping, but for MMA in general, so that, you know, the English fans feel like, hey, we have our, you know, MMA Muhammad Ali type of guy, and they feel like what Conor is in Ireland. Well, Conor will always be remembered as this iconic figure in Irish MMA. Bisping, especially with a giant victory over the most all-American of Americans and Olympian Dan Henderson, who previously beat him, I think that could be the kind of thing that inspires, you know, young British fighters and people to kind of get into it a little bit more. So there may be, there's probably more of a residual effect as opposed to if you fought Jacare, where people be like, oh yeah, remember that time he fought the guy who had the weird nickname and I think he was an alligator from Brazil.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a new show debuting, I believe, on Monday night, August 15th. Mm-hmm. It's UFC related. Do you know the name of the show that'll be on at 9:30 Monday night, going up against Monday Night Raw on FS1?
I don't know the name of it, but I know who it involves.
It is called The Evolution of Punk, and it doesn't have to do with punk music. It has to do with Phil Brooks, our old friend CM Punk. I saw the trailer for it. It looks interesting. Obviously, they're trying to build him as an underdog who was a pro wrestler for years and is finally fulfilling his dream, his true destiny, to be a cage fighter at 38, I want to say. He's going to be 38. Obviously, this is being done to help promote his fight against Mickey Gall. Thoughts on Punk coming into the UFC? You think he wins a fight? Is he going to be one and done? What do you see for old CM?
I saw the trailer. I thought it was very well done. I thought that they did the best job they could with it. I really liked the way that Punk talked, and he basically said, I'm 0-0, and I don't deserve to be here, but I'm going to make the most of it. As far as how he does inside of the cage, as I'm very fond of mentioning, one of my very good friends in the world, like one of my few actual friends in the world, Daniel Vanderlei, is the lead jiu-jitsu coach there at Rufus Sport. He's trained Punk from the beginning. He's seen him evolve. And so I'm not always sure exactly what to say because Daniel's also a client of mine. Yeah.
All right.
Fucking Ariel doesn't have to deal with this shit. You know, Ariel doesn't have clients. I think for what I can say in general is that everybody says CM Punk works really hard, that he's improved a lot. And the truth is that I think he will do better than almost anybody else who was ever in his position would do. If you took your normal mid-30-year-old athletic guy and put
him in... Batista. How about Batista? I mean...
Exactly.
That's an example.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. People don't even remember Batista had a fight, but he fought in Providence, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 years ago now, but when he was on that hiatus from WWE. And I believe he was training with like the Diaz brothers quite a bit, and he fought on a local regional show. He wanted to fight one time, and he did it on a local show that not a lot of people saw.
And he won.
He didn't look great, but he looked like a guy who was 0-0 and in his late 30s fighting for the first time. The difference, obviously, with Punk is he's doing it on a pay-per-view where he's probably going to be basically the co-main. I mean, they're probably not going to have him be the second from last fight, but...
He won't be the second from last fight, because that's UFC 203 in Cleveland. 50-50 shot, I might actually be there. The co-main is Verdum and I think Ben Rothwell. Ugh. But it's weird because Mickey Gall is not who you would fight in your first pro fight, is a general rule. He's not, except that he kind of is, because Mickey Gall is not an experienced pro himself. He's, you know, inexperienced. He needs several fights in the regional circuit. Any other circumstance, he would not be in the UFC. You would just not book a welterweight with his level of cage fighting experience in the UFC. But he does have a legitimate background. He's a brown belt in jiu-jitsu, which, you know, jiu-jitsu is CM Punk's original discipline. That's where he comes from. If Punk has an advantage over Gall, it's that he's used to the big fight. And even though Gall's been in the UFC and he's been in more competitive combat sports, CM Punk will be nervous. He will probably, you know, throw up. He will have the adrenaline dump like a lot of people. But this is someone that has been at WrestleMania. And, you know, yes, it's different. It's fake, but... Shit, man. Go out in front of 70,000 people and a million people on pay-per-view or whatever. There is something to be said that he can block that out. And say what you will about Punk being a dickhead, he's a very mentally strong human being. And everything I've heard, like, I've not heard anything negative about him. And I can say that for a fact. And if there was something negative to be said, I would have heard it. People would have been like, oh, you know, maybe it's like, it's everything is like the guy shows up, he goes to the gi classes, he goes to beginner's classes, advanced classes, he does everything. He never asks for a single favor. So whether he wins or loses, you know, all due respect to CM Punk for truly doing this the right way, if you will.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't fault him at all for trying it, and he was offered the job. He took the job. He's going to get paid.
He's going to lose.
I don't fault him for any of that. But the one thing I will say is there are no professional sports where somebody comes in their mid to late 30s with no experience and does well. I mean, you can say Randy Couture. But he had some.
Yeah, that was
legit wrestling experience, and he was 33. He was 5 years younger, and might have had less damage done to his body than Punk.
He was 33. The sport was not as evolved, and he was a world class combat sport athlete.
Right. And here's the thing: I don't want to see Punk get knocked out. I don't want to see anybody get knocked out, really. But bottom line is this. It's like anything can happen in a fight. Maybe he pulls it out. Who knows? It's possible. Anything's possible. But if I was betting and had to bet my mortgage one way or the other, I would not pick Punk to win a fight in the UFC.
I'm sorry, but I wouldn't either. And I say that also just having seen – some of the brief clips, and there was just one clip, and yeah, it's unfair to judge somebody on a split second, but he threw a hook, he threw a right hook to the body, and he just, it was so just amateur hour style of striking. And I say that, and not that I'm a striker, but the gym I train at, we have a lot of really good Muay Thai guys. And so I watch them a lot, and you can tell the guys who have been there for years, how straight their punches are and everything, versus guys who are just kind of like, they leave themselves open for a little too long. And Mickey Gall ain't no striker either, but fuck, he's like a 20-some-odd-year-old kid. Like, I'm 33, and when I train with, I've been on the mats at times, and I'm way more experienced than kids who are 20 years old, but they're just being 20 is enough to give me problems. And it's just like, and I sit there and I go, this is bullshit. You don't know what you're doing. Fuck your little gas tank. Oh, you were out till 4 a.m. drinking? Oh, I go to sleep. I went to sleep at 9 p.m. because, if I have anything to drink, it takes me like 48 hours to recover. So I hate you. Not to pump drinks, but yeah.
I mean, to me too, Punk has been training for whatever, 2 years. There's a big difference between training when you're 18 to 20 and when you're 36 to 38. Hmm. I mean, it's not like, I'm 36 now. It's like my back. I've done nothing in my life, like nothing physical ever. And it's like when I get out of bed, my back hurts every morning. And it's just like from moving cases of wine around. You know what I mean? Like that's what threw my back out, and my back's been messed up ever since. And it's like I cannot imagine starting to train tomorrow with no experience for the UFC. It's insane.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I think the mindset is though that it's a fight, it's cage fighting, and I don't think people recognize the skill that's involved. For some reason, people think they can watch UFC, and if they trained a little bit, they could learn jiu-jitsu and learn how to strike and get in there themselves. And there's a whole regional circuit with thousands and thousands of fighters who never have a 500 record, who never get to Bellator, who never get to WSOF, and by far never even get close to UFC. And that's when they started training when they were a teenager, and never make it. So again, with Punk starting at twice the age a lot of people start at, I don't expect him to go far.
Yeah, I think especially when you look at the age of someone, the younger you are, and it's a physiological difference in that your brain, especially for men, your brain is not fully developed at 18 or 20 years old. So the neurons and the interconnectedness of your neurons to your physical body are not totally developed. It's easier for you to develop that muscle memory. And muscle memory, all fighting is muscle memory. And when you're younger, it just develops quicker. The older you are, you have to do 10 times the reps that somebody else younger does. And yeah, again, like there's so many people, like, again, the gym I train at, Carlson Gracie Jr. Gym right here in Chicago, Illinois, and Milwaukee Avenue, train there with the greatest in the world. And I see these guys who are in their 20s, and you put us in a gi, I can kind of do okay with them, but I've seen them in actual fights, and like they'll win some, they'll lose some or whatever, but the speed and the danger of a fight, I think, is very much underappreciated. Like, there's his name is Guy Africano. He's a good friend of mine. He's a black belt, much bigger than I am. He and I will do a variation of training where we train jiu-jitsu, but we will allow basically open hand slaps, like in Pancrase. And, like he started doing it with me to like, cause he's old school. Like he got his black belt, you know, he started with Carlson Gracie Sr. Like old school jiu-jitsu where like you had to learn how to defend yourself in the streets and stuff like that. And the first time we did it, I had never been so tired in my life. And I've rolled, and again, he's a 250-pound, he's got a black belt in judo and jiu-jitsu, outstanding. But if I want to and I'm in shape and we roll, yeah, he'll tap me a lot. But my cardio is fine. Once we added the strikes and I had to suddenly cover up, just little light slaps, and some of them kind of box my ears, but I'm not getting punched in the face or my jaw broke. All of a sudden, it was like, a totally different game. I couldn't hang out in any single position. And as a jiu-jitsu guy, and Punk is a jits guy just like I am pretty much, you get used to certain positions where you're safe, and you think, okay, I'll rest here in the turtle position, and then I'll wait for him to move or whatever. No, no, no. If you're in turtle, they're just slapping the shit out of you. They're punching you, and you got to move. And you don't get to wait for the perfect opening like you would in jiu-jitsu. And when that, and to me, that was a gigantic eye-opener. The moment the guy did that to me the first time, and I was like, holy crap. Like, where normally when I'm in really good shape, I can roll for 30 minutes straight, no problem. I'm not huffing and puffing. It was like 3 or 4 minutes of that, and I was like ready to vomit. It was just, and that was just slapping in a controlled environment with no adrenaline. So,
And somebody who wasn't really trying to hurt you.
Exactly. And he was like, he knew where I was at. He could guide it along. And, it was one of those deals where he'd get 10 on me. But hey, in my defense, I got one or two decent slaps on. Every once in a while I get one on him, I'd be like, that's right. I gotcha. But I didn't want to hit him too hard because I was afraid, like, I don't want to anger the guy who could kill me. So, right. Best of luck to Punk, but, it's a different ball game, but he's one of the greatest camps in the world. He's got people who are excellent at everything in the world. Tyrone Woodley spent most of his last camp training at Rufus Sport. Duke Rufus was in his camp, in his corner. They have a world champion there, Sergio Pettis, Anthony Pettis, Eric Koch, all these guys. He's got great teammates around him. So basically CM Punk is kind of a referendum on if you are in your mid to late 30s, are very athletic and taking care of yourself, how well can you do if you get in a cage fight? CM Punk will answer that question.
Fair enough. Probably the biggest news story, I hate to even call it news because it's not really news, but what got the most publicity over the last week was our old friend Conor McGregor. He was on a conference call last week, I believe, where he said this: I have thought about the WWE. For the most part, I think these guys are pussies, to be honest. They're messed up pussies, if you ask me. Fair play to Brock. He got in and fought, but at the end of the day, he was juiced up to the fucking eyeballs. How can I respect that? The other guy, meaning Punk, hasn't fought yet, so I don't know about him yet. Then, a few days later, he tweeted, I didn't mean no disrespect to the WWE fans. What I meant to say was that I'd slap the head off your entire roster and twice on Sundays. This led to, I don't want to say a shitstorm, but a firestorm of pro wrestlers tweeting back at McGregor with a lot of thousands of retweets, thousands of quotes, flares claiming McGregor stole his gimmick, Kurt Angle, Roman Reigns, JBL, Kofi Kingston, Jericho. All of these guys are responding back to McGregor. What do you think McGregor's trying to do? What's the purpose behind this?
It's weird because I was kind of surprised by what he said, only because I feel like a lot of modern athletes of all disciplines, whether it's, any sport, understand what pro wrestling is, and most of them seem to have somewhat of a respect, at least on a physical level, for what the guys do. And Conor's attitude is more your late 90s UFC fighter, where they were kind of like, I'm pissed that these pro wrestlers get all this money and more respect than I do, and I'm real, and they're fake. And it's like the real and fake thing is so totally gone. And, his comments on Brock, it doesn't matter. It's calling him juiced up. It's like, yeah, Brock, it's heavyweights. Brock is Brock. It doesn't matter.
Or the other argument is, who does McGregor respect? I mean, he's come out and even said himself that he agrees with the Diaz brothers, Nate and Nick, that everybody's on steroids, which is obviously an exaggeration, but I mean, that essentially means he respects no one.
Yeah, it's just weird because he kind of, halfway backtracked on it, if you will, and like, I'm not saying you guys are this, but I'm just saying I beat you all. It was weird because, like, it's almost like somebody's like, hey, you have a lot of fans, so we wanted to, I don't know, show some deferential respect. The whole thing is weird. Like, I understand all the pro wrestlers trying to get in on it because they're going to say whatever they want, knowing that Conor ain't never going to fight them. Because if you're Kofi Kingston, Conor's not going to fight you. Even though he'd murder you in about 2 seconds, he ain't going to waste his time. So you get a little bit of publicity. You can defend your, you know, your profession and all that. I don't think it matters. I don't think anybody's going to care. Ric Flair can say what he wants about Conor. The idea of somebody being a really high profile, you know, wheeling, dealing, jet flying, limousine riding, all this stuff. Like, yeah, Flair, you didn't really, first of all, you stole your gimmick from Buddy Landell. And even then it's like, oh, somebody that talked a lot of trash and acted like a pompous ass. I don't know, Muhammad Ali, Gorgeous George, every single successful high level dickhead athlete. I mean, that's like saying that Conor stole it from Deion Sanders. I mean, what's the difference between Ric Flair and Deion Sanders? Nothing. They're just that, you know, there's a certain personality of, I know I'm great, I'm going to be flashy, I'm going to drive a Benz, I'm going to spend all my money and all this shit. What are you going to do about it? And, you know, that's just kind of what Conor's done. And honestly, his comments about pro wrestling tell me that he wasn't influenced by pro wrestling. Because I've seen other guys in MMA, Chael Sonnen, for instance, who clearly take on a persona. They don't say those types of things about pro wrestling because they obviously were a fan or they watch it on some level. And my impression is Conor probably didn't watch it. I think it's just, you know, a street tough Mick from the suburbs of Dublin, I think it is, and just talk shit. And
or the other option is he knows what he's doing, and he's working people. He's trying to get a little hype and a little buzz going, and going at wrestling. I mean, there's a lot of wrestling fans on the internet seeing this stuff. It's free pub that he doesn't have to really work for. He doesn't really have to do anything. He blurts out a few sentences. He types in 140 characters, and it's like, boom. He suddenly has this whole other fan base talking about him who may not have before. I mean, obviously Rousey had the crossover with the WWE and WrestleMania, which probably helped her drawing power in UFC even more. And so obviously Brock had that as well. Maybe this gets a couple WWE fans to buy the show, who wants to see him get his ass kicked. I'm not saying that'll happen, but I'm saying there's potential in his mind that, hey, you know what, I'll talk some crap about wrestling and see what happens. And to a degree, it did get some pub.
I know what you're saying, except for Conor is kind of, I mean, he's a chimera for sure, but he's also a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. And that sometimes he's in pure worker mode, and he's just doing things because he knows he's going to rile people up and all that. But we've seen, especially after the whole UFC 200 debacle, Conor just does things and he doesn't think it all the way through.
True.
And all those tweets where he just comes across like a whiny bitch. And this was just like a response to a question. It was kind of a one-off and it was a throwaway. And it only got any kind of traction because the pro wrestlers made it into something. It wasn't the focal point of a press conference or anything like that. My guess is that Conor just said it. And once it was said, I think Conor has a great instinct for seeing when shit will catch on. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he necessarily always understands how to generate it, but the moment he sees a fire, he knows how to add kerosene to it. Not gasoline all the time, but at least kerosene. And, as we once found out in my family, cause we have a cabin in Minnesota, we have bonfires, and my father wanted to start a bonfire. And he asked my mom, no, he was going to start a sauna. And he asked my mom to hand him a certain can. And she goes, this is gasoline. And he goes, no, it's kerosene. And my dad was kind of losing his eyesight at the time. And he was insisting that it was kerosene, not gasoline. And my mom was like, I don't think so. One of my cousins finally came over and goes, oh, no, that's gasoline. So my dad almost blew up part of northern Minnesota because he thought it was gasoline and not kerosene. And he was just dumping it on like crazy. So, Conor McGregor may be like my dead blind father in that he doesn't always know what he's doing, but he still managed success nonetheless. Get Ariel Helwani ain't doing that one, are you, bitch?
No. I bet his dad rarely set things on fire. news broke today. GSP is back in the USADA pool. I shouldn't say back. He is debuting in the USADA pool. This is not an Olympic event. In fact, he's going to be getting tested for performance-enhancing drugs. He claims he's on the list starting today, August 10th. He also said he doesn't want an exemption. He wants to be like everyone else. He wants to be tested fairly, just like the rest of the roster. He's also saying that he would be interested in fighting Nick Diaz again, which actually, I mean, a lot of people don't like that fight because the first one was pretty dull. But to me, it kind of makes sense because I think it'll draw. I think Nick Diaz is a bigger name just based on Nate's surge in popularity and the whole suspension thing, getting all those signatures and just the whole last 18 months for him. Even not fighting, I think he's a bigger name than he was 2 years ago. Thoughts on GSP coming back, being in the pool, potential fights for him?
It's that's really interesting. I'll just start with the being in the pool in that, I mean, St. Pierre's always been a very outspoken critic of steroids and all this stuff. And, I hate this stuff, blah, blah, blah. And yet he's looked like he's on steroids. Well, PEDs. Like, if you look at him, you go, how is this guy clean? Like, he's right. Just so well built. So, like, there's always some part of me that's like, is this like a Lance Armstrong deal where a guy almost convinces himself? But putting himself back into the pool, I mean, we've seen the UFC and the way that their testing is, like, it ain't no joke. So, if St. Pierre's on something, he's going to get caught. Because John Jones and Brock Lesnar arguably have as much money as St. Pierre ever would, and they got caught. So it's not a matter of having the latest in technology and all that. And that either tells me that St. Pierre's a complete sociopath who has no concept of anything. Or maybe he's on stuff and he doesn't even know it. Which is if he was Brazilian, I would believe that. There's a lot. I think there's a lot of guys in Brazil who are on shit and they don't know it. Just their coaches say, "Take this drink," and they, "Oh, whatever, okay." Like they're just, again, people look at this and we think everybody is kind of smart, like we are in America or whatever. Like your average American, Nick, you're forced to go through at least 10 years of school. I think you have to be 16 before you can drop out. Yeah, in the inner city, some people don't really know how to read and write, blah, blah, blah. But most people in America have a pretty damn good education, even if they try not to. You compare that to some kid from the favelas in Brazil, they can barely read and write Portuguese, let alone English. And if somebody is telling them, and this person has been in a position of power, it's like a father figure, take this and you'll be good. And like, oh, okay, they do what they're told. They don't always know. I don't think George St. Pierre is in that boat. He's obviously intelligent, well-spoken, and his weird fear of aliens notwithstanding, he's got a good head on his shoulders. So maybe he truly is, always has been clean. Props to him for not wanting the exemption. The exemptions aren't bad. The Brock Lesnar situation arises. That's just how it is.
Yeah. But he even said he flat out said he didn't want to be like Brock, and based on his history and everything he's stood for and said against PED use, he said it would be hypocritical of him to get that exemption and just fight. So he's putting his money where his mouth is for sure.
It's even actually, he's putting more at stake than a lot of people because presume that he's been clean forever. Well, right. It's fair to say that, he's never failed anything and he's said the right things. If he comes back going through the really strenuous testing and loses, he's got, you know, egg on his face. People might be like, oh, well, you're not on the gas. That's why you lost or whatever. Right. So for him to really go into it tells me that maybe he really always has been clean. Of course, the alternative is he knows he's clean now. He knows he's never going to fight again. He uses this to secure a legacy. But again, that's very Machiavellian and like a high level of thinking that I don't, again, as a lawyer, you know, I would think of something like that, be like, yes, I know I'll never fight again. So what I'll do is I'll get off all the juice, then I'll have them test me 1,000 times, and I'll never fight again. Then I'll be like, hey, everybody, look, I went through the program and never failed any of the 12 tests. And meanwhile, a gentleman named Matt in Massachusetts has a weird sound happening in his background. And I'm clean the entire time. Oh, damn those chairs. So, but I don't think St. Pierre's that, you know, smart or, and again, I think to be that kind of level of devious, you know, the Mike Coughlin, Karl Rove, Hillary Clinton, she murdered that guy. You know, she fucking murdered that dude. I'm just apoplectic. Well,
like, actually, she did it. She was the one that pulled the trigger.
That fucking 27-year-old guy who released all the information to WikiLeaks, and Julian Assange confirmed it was him, and Julian Assange, for good hook or for crook, has never been wrong about the stuff he's released, said that he was the leak, and that guy was found dead and murdered in Washington, D.C., and nobody took his wallet, his watch, his phone, his shoes, anything. And that was right after he had leaked the shit about Hillary. Therefore, he was listening to Donald Trump when Trump said to shoot Hillary, and Hillary heard it, knew he was coming for her, and so he got involved ahead of time. And it's all, we're all going to be ruled by, as I wrote once in a column, half the country will hate the person who was elected president, and the other half the country will not be happy who they voted for. We're all screwed. Buy your land and invest in gold, everybody, like on Fox News Channel. Invest in gold. Gold has gone up 10,000%. Halfcredit.com, brought to you by gold. Send me some, because I need it.
So... More USADA stuff. I know every week we harp on this and we're beating on it, but couple more little interesting tidbits. I mean, the USADA thing is still fairly new. They're going to work out some kinks. There's going to be issues. The science behind some of this kind of murky. Yes.
I know that you're sitting there going, what the fuck just happened? Go ahead. You can have a Hillary Clinton rant, too. Do it.
No, I'm okay. No, I'm okay. Because here's the thing. I don't like either option, either.
God,
neither
do I.
But it's like I have a hard time finding someone who actually likes either Trump or Clinton. But Trump is just digging a deeper and deeper grave for himself. If Hillary never speaks again this whole election cycle, she'll probably be better off. Let Trump just keep going.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's a reason Hillary Clinton has not actually held a press conference since last December. And people give her shit for it, but I'm like, you're leading the polls, and the goal is to win. Like, yeah. All you have to do is win, and you know Trump will say something dumb, and like, yeah, oh, he's like, maybe some of the Second Amendment guys will do something. And, like, people are giving him shit for it. I'm like, oh, for fuck off. It's obviously a joke. We know it's a joke.
Yeah, and but you can't joke like that when you're going to be the leader of the free world, though. You know what I mean? You can. Yeah, I can.
I know.
We don't matter, but it's like, if you're elected president, it kind of matters a little bit.
I know. It's one of those weird things where I'm like, we're so conditioned that our politicians don't talk like that when they do, we're like, you shouldn't say that. But we also hate the way politicians talk, so it's kind of like, we're damned if we do, damned if we don't. Like,
to me it's not so much how they talk, and it's a real vague thing that's murky, and it's just something you feel inside is the level of genuineness. And I don't feel like either of them are genuine. I think they're both kind of full of it.
If
you just look at some of the stuff they've said over the years, just, and like, I can remember vividly, the election with Kerry, against Bush. I think it was 2004, where everybody was saying Kerry was a flip flopper. He was this or that. It was like, I fought in Vietnam. It's like, and they're saying he wasn't really a hero and all this stuff. And it's like, you look back at that, and that was like the big story. And now it's like you've got murders, you've got people threatening to kill the other candidates. It's like, it's unbelievable. It's amazing.
I know what Donald Trump's wife looks like naked.
A lot of people know what Hillary's husband looks like naked.
Well, true, but there's photos of that's really good, actually. But I 100% believe that Bill Clinton has Alzheimer's or something.
He looks rough. He looks old. And
that video of him with the balloons, like I have looked like that if I'm really, really high. Otherwise, you'd either have to be stoned or have lost your mental faculties. And I don't know. Like, the whole thing, and I wrote my column about Gary Johnson and GMOs, how he let me down. And fuck, you fucking moron. Just for fuck's sake.
But the thing with the GMOs, I got to ask you. What's the matter? What's the issue with labeling it? Why do you care?
Because, and I really believe this.
Okay.
It's because there's nothing wrong with them.
Okay.
There's not been one single thing ever shown to be wrong with them. In fact, every single scientific study ever has basically provided positive results or neutral. And so to label something, by labeling something, what's the purpose of labeling something? Why do you label ingredients in a food? Why do you
the idea is to inform the consumer. And I mean, why some people, but here's the thing. So some people, to me, if people want to know what's in their food and where it comes from, let them know.
If there's
some people who don't give a shit if it's GMO or if it is or whatever, let the consumer know. Let them be aware and make the decision themselves.
And that's fine. If people want to know, I understand that. But the reason we have forced labeling is because there's a chance it might be harmful to the consumer. We only force labeling of things that might be bad. You only have a forced label on something that could harm you.
Yeah, but that's not the case in food. If you go to the food aisle, a lot of them are pushing the health aspect of the item, whether it's low-cal, low-fat.
That's not negative stuff.
They're promoting the good stuff, too.
And not one of those labels is government-required.
Okay. There's
no government-required, hey, our food is healthy for you. Our food is low in fat, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The government requires certain labeling as far as how much fat content, carbohydrates, protein, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But because people, we've decided as a society, need to know how much there is in their chicken and bread or whatever.
You could compare it though to something like just say a bag of chips, Doritos or whatever. You flip it over, you look at it, and you see the fat content and the cholesterol's astronomical, and you choose not to buy it based on that.
Exactly.
I mean, the government forces that, the FDA enforces that, and you got to list it. The thing with GMOs, I'm not an expert, but at the restaurant I work at, sometimes it's an issue. We'll get customers who call and say, hey, what do you use for friolator oil? Like, this happens. And ours is soybean based. And soybeans, 95% of soybeans harvested in the United States or maybe even the world are from GMO sources. So it's like they can't have anything from the friolator. And whether or not those people are crazy or misinformed or whatever, it's like they want to know and they think it's important. I mean, some people don't give a shit about cholesterol and eat a steak every night. My grandfather did it and he lived to be 93. And a lot of it, too, is it's faddish, meaning things come and go. I mean, there was the Atkins diet forever. Then he died of a heart attack, and that kind of went away. Right now, gluten's the other big one.
Oh,
people don't want to eat gluten.
For fuck's sake.
But here's the thing. There's different variances with the whole gluten thing. Some people legit have celiac disease, which they'll puff up and have like a legit allergic reaction as if they had peanuts or shellfish or whatever the other big allergies are. So that's one aspect. Then some people are just doing it as a diet. Like they're trying to avoid wheat and barley and rye, and that's okay too. Again, it's like everybody's perspective is different, and it's just, to me, it's like, if people want to know if the stuff has GMO in it, just let them know. Like, I think the GMO, Monsanto, and those companies who have created this stuff, it makes them look guilty by saying they don't want it mentioned on the packaging. It makes them look worse. If they said, hey, this stuff is safe, we're happy to label it, people would be like, oh, all right. The fact that they don't want to do it, in fear that maybe their stuff won't sell as well, makes people more suspicious. And I'm not saying they should be, but the reality is the reality.
Well, here's the thing. You put things like cholesterol or carbs or sodium on packaging because there are negative repercussions to how much you have of that in your diet. If you have, certain people cannot have too much sodium in their diet, too many carbs, whatever, too much cholesterol, whatever. But with GMO, there is zero negative research on it. Nothing. And so, to say, and I know you're saying when Monsanto doesn't want it to be broadcast, but at the same time, it implies that there's something off about it. Why else would you require a label? If you're a regular person who doesn't think about these things, and the government now says, we are requiring that every single label say GMO on it, you're going to ask yourself, well, why? Why does it have to say GMO? And if the answer is, we have no answer, the answer is simply because some people think it might be bad, but they have no evidence. Zero evidence. They cannot tell you anything. Gregor Mendel, the monk in the 1800s, proved this stuff when he crossbred peas. We've done this for dogs, crops. If you look at the way that corn looked 300 years ago versus the way that corn looks today, it was genetically modified because people crossbred certain breeds of different strains of corn to create what we eat now as corn. The only difference is that nowadays we do it in a test tube in a beaker in probably a more safe and sterile environment. We can now have fruit that does not have to have pesticide on it. That's how good they are. We have invented apples.
That freaks people out, though.
Here's the thing. I don't care if it freaks people out. People are stupid, and they should get the fuck over it. Because GMO will save human lives. They will be able to develop corn and wheat that can be grown in the middle of the Sahara Desert one day. And that will save the lives of millions of people in Africa. We're not talking a few people. Millions of human beings will be alive because of the ability to manipulate the genes on a DNA level, and it will not hurt anybody at all. We can grow food twice as big for half the price. And sure, if you're rich and you're and whatever and you're an elite, you can go to Whole Foods and spend, you know, $8 a gallon for milk. But if you're a single mom with a baby crying and you need $2 a gallon milk, and it is 100% safe. Again, nothing. There has never been one single study ever saying that GMOs are harmful. And this comes from Forbes magazine, from The Nation, from the World Health Organization. This is not like a left-wing, right-wing thing. This is not global warming where you have people going, well, you know, the temperature's going up, and somebody's like, well, you predicted it would go up 20 degrees. It went up 2 degrees. What's wrong? People are arguing science in that matter. When people oppose GMO, their entire basis is, it seems kind of weird. It's no different than when people don't want to vaccinate their kids because they think it will cause autism, even though it won't cause autism. All you're doing is preventing little Jimmy from getting the measles, the mumps, and the rubella. And I had my MMR shot, and I don't know what the mumps are, but I know I'm not going to get them, motherfuckers.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. Again, to me, it's like if people want to know, let them know. Who
and they,
cares?
Here's the thing.
Put it in fine print on the back. If somebody's really going to flip it over and look for it and they want to know, let them know.
You know what,
I
though?
Mean,
here's the thing. People do know because one of my favorite brands of nacho chips was Donkey Chips. Donkey Chips are delicious.
I've never heard of them.
Oh,
it's going to be a Midwest thing.
Maybe. It's been around for a long time because it's one of the few things my ex-wife gave me in life. Donkey Chips are really good, and for a while they're like, I almost didn't buy them because they bragged about how they were gluten-free and GMO-free.
So they're corn chips, basically.
Yeah, that's all they are. They're corn chips. And I was like, oh, you're bragging about being GMO-free, which I'm like, oh, I want my food to be full of GMOs. Although, you know, and the gluten thing is, the gluten thing is equally as stupid because, like, I'll go to the store and I'll buy, like, a box, you know, a little thing of ham, and it'll be, like, gluten-free. I'm like, no shit, you're gluten-free. It's fucking ham. What the hell? Like, how stupid are people? Oh,
there's
fuck's
weird
sake.
Stuff with wheat product in it. You would have no idea, though.
And nobody has celiac disease, by the way. Like, three people have it. The rest of you are just assholes who are looking at me different, and I know I'm choking on my own saliva right now, so I'll let Matt take it over.
Like, literally every day, I shouldn't say every day, but most days, like, I work in a restaurant for a living, but most days we'll have people come in and ask about a gluten-free menu, what do we have? And again, I don't want to say it's a fad. There are some people who are allergic to gluten.
It is.
But it's the new diet. You know, there was low carb, there's been whatever, Jenny Craig, whatever diet's going around. Now it's a diet. And
yeah,
people are looking at it to lose weight.
And every single one of these diets has one single thing in common, and that is calorie restriction. That's why Atkins work for people, because a gigantic chicken breast is like 250 calories. Two pieces of bread is 250 calories. That's right. Why Atkins worked. It was all about calorie reduction. You can eat whatever you want. You can eat nothing but chocolate all day long as you have so many calories. And, you know, gluten-free, it's great. It works as a diet because most of the products that have gluten are wheat-based or bread-based or carbohydrate-based. And therefore, they will have a lot more calories in them. Meat does not. And I will just say, to close out the topic, I'm only closing this out because I know no one gives a shit. I want my cows to be filled with as many steroids as possible so I can get the steroids just like they do in Mexico and fucking China. I want that Decadurabalin in my system. I want the Clomidomide. I want to be juiced to the gills from eating a steak. And I want to put on muscle mass just by eating a steak, motherfuckers. The FDA is denying me my civil right to eat meat that is tainted by steroids. Damn it!
This leads well into our next topic.
This is not planned, by the way.
Ming Guangyo. Are you familiar with him? He's a UFC fighter. He won Tough China a couple years ago.
I'm so happy you actually went to this. Like, I'm like, if you said this, it's a perfect segue. Woohoo!
He tested positive for clenbuterol, which I think has some anabolic agents and some stimulant sort of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not an expert, but it's on the list, the USADA list, the prohibited substance list. Anyway, he tested positive for this a couple months back on May 19th, but USADA found he ingested the substance without fault or negligence. The USADA statement was this: consistent with numerous prior reported cases globally, the issue of illicit administration of clenbuterol to animals destined for food production can result in, under specific conditions, a positive sample from an athlete. So basically, our friend Ning ate a steak or some beef, something that had trace elements of this prohibited substance, and got popped for it. And he was going to possibly be suspended for 2 years because he tested positive. Somehow, some way, again, none of the details have really come out on this, how you fight this sort of thing. Basically, it's the tainted supplement argument. But he's claiming he just ate some beef, and whatever, the beef was tainted with this steroid, clenbuterol. Again, we were kind of leading into this and got off track, obviously, but USADA's still working the kinks out here. And some of the punishments, the penalties for being popped, whether you're BJ Penn and you use an IV and you admitted to using it, you get 6 months for that. Then you've got, you know, Yoel Romero, who tested positive, claimed a tainted supplement, apparently sent them the supplement, or USADA goes and buys it themselves and tests it and see if it's tainted. Again, we don't know all the details on how that actually works, what that process is, the appeals process, that sort of thing. But to me, it's kind of a good thing that USADA is giving fighters some leeway and kind of hearing them out, because they could be real draconian and just say, you know what, you failed, it's 2 years, see ya. But they don't seem to be going in that direction. Where are you at with USADA nowadays?
First of all, I'm very happy you used the word draconian, because I thought you were saying beat dicks. So what college did you go to? where did you go to university?
Bridgewater State College.
I think
never heard of it.
That's probably pretty good. I don't know.
Yeah, it's all right.
You use the word draconian. This is something, it's very weird. I have George St. Pierre versus Matt Trigg on, Frank Trigg on my TV right
Matt
now.
Matt Trigg.
Yeah. St. Pierre is a purple belt. This is what I do, everybody, every single night. I'm glad that they are reasonable. There is a problem as far as, you know, for my gigantic rant about the FDA and all this, I will say the FDA is kind of one of the few government organizations. I'm like, I don't totally mind that my milk is my milk, because when you see like, and this is not unique to the UFC. There's a couple guys in the NFL who went down to Mexico. Yeah. They ate some tainted beef, and they could show that the beef in Mexico was full of steroids, because, you know, poor countries, they don't have the regulations, and all they want to do is make as much money as they can off their cows, and I would do if I was a farmer there too. In the case of the Japanese gentleman, Ming, Ding, Ting Tong, whatever, oh, that's racist.
Ming Guanyo.
What I think really helped him is that he claimed it, and more than that, man alive, George St. Pierre is a fucking ripped God. Goodness gracious, look at this man. When they did the tests, it wasn't just that he said it was tainted meat. The amount of clenbuterol in the system was so low that it really wouldn't have been performance enhancing anyways. And it is a steroid, but it's a steroid that is typically found, at least in modern Western medicine, as far as we're concerned, within asthma inhalers and things of that nature. It's not your, you know, it's an anabolic steroid. It does help. It could be used for performance enhancing purposes. Just as a general rule, and people call me racist, I don't trust anybody from China or Russia or basically any of those countries. Because
it's not a race thing, it's a country thing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really happy that Ms. Ledecky there beat the shit out of that Russian chick in swimming. Oh, my dogs are looking at each other funny. Ooh, there's going to be a humping fest. But, you know, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm blind to it, but I feel like America does not have that institutionalized problem like Russia does, where, like, they were drilling holes in the wall to cheat. And I know that China would do the exact same thing. We've seen it with the Brazilian. Jose Aldo gets tested. Oh, they just throw away the urine, and that goes on. It seems like to me the crappier the country economically, the more likely they are to cheat on these things. Whereas, like, I know that Vladimir Putin, or the I can't think of the PM of China right now. I used to always know who it was. They probably genuinely give a shit if they win a bunch of Olympic gold medals. I don't think Barack Obama is sitting there going, I really want to win the 100-meter backstroke. Like, it's just not on his radar. He's sitting there going, I want to make sure that nobody dies from a terrorist attack. I want to make sure that Muhammad Akmar Omad, to use a racist and stereotypical name, does not shoot up a gay nightclub. Like, we just have bigger things to worry about, and I think the same thing with England, France, you know, modern Germany, not the East Germans. But that said, with the gentleman from China now, he's probably just too poor to afford it. I don't think the MMA is on the radar of most, you know, of the Chinese higher ups. Once if it becomes on the radar, and we're kind of lucky in that sense, in that the organization that bought the UFC was not the Chinese organization. Because if it had been, I could see where they try to manipulate things. But China's athletics are just different. They work very well in super structured environments where they can control things and where natural adult athleticism doesn't matter. And that's why they don't dominate in, you know, swimming or running or of any sort, anything where you have to be an adult and do well. But they can do very well in gymnastics because you can just state control somebody from the age of 5. And when they're 15 or I guess they're actually 16 now, they can still compete. But at the end of the day, this is all conjecture, and it's some dude that nobody listening, I don't care if you're the hardcore fan in the world. You don't know who the fuck this dude is. He won, like, Ultimate Fighter Japan. Who gives a shit? He's shit. Like, he's going to fucking fight in Macau and Hong Kong. One of them is my second favorite city in the world behind Paris. Maybe number 1A. Macau is a really, really, really cool town. But it's kind of like the mixture of, like, China and Las Vegas, which is odd. But it doesn't matter. Everybody focuses on China. WWE, UFC, all the movie people, they all see China as this big deal. But I remember reading once, like, with movies in America, like, everybody wants that Chinese market. Apparently, if a movie makes, like, $100 million in China, the Americans will see, like, $20 million of it. Like, it's not as lucrative as people think. It's lucrative. It's better than nothing. And that's why, like, Doctor Strange coming out from Marvel in November, they changed it so that the ancient one that teaches Doctor Strange the ways of mysticism always was from Tibet. He's not from Tibet anymore because the Chinese would have a problem with that. And they didn't want to lose that market. But I think people focus a little too much on China and India because they see, a billion people. But it's like, they're not wealthy. Like, America's got 300 million people, and the vast majority of them can afford to spend $50 once a month to watch a pay-per-view. And that ain't the case in China. So to bring it all back, I think the guy probably didn't cheat but on this one, but he'll probably cheat in the future. So, yeah, fuck you, China.
Here's a bigger question, though. Do you like this approach that USADA's going with now where, you know, there's – again, we don't know what the appeals process is for a fighter. What if they legitimately had tainted meat? How does that process work is one aspect of it. But also the fact that they're hearing people out. It's not you failed, you're gone for 2 years. I mean, that was a fear a lot of people had initially. And it seems to be that they're – at least there's some sort of appeals process for the fighters. Do you see – obviously that's a good thing, yeah?
Oh, 100%. I think the appeals process is good. I'm very happy to see that USADA is listening to people. My biggest problem with actually this is that when they have these weird rulings where they basically say a guy is not at fault, but they still suspend him for a certain period of time, Yoel Romero is the best example. USADA said, Yoel Romero, you're not guilty of knowingly taking a performance-enhancing drug out of competition, but they still suspend him for 9 months. I don't know why you would suspend him. I could see, like, if somebody unknowingly took a PED and it helped him win a fight, I could say, fine, you suspend the guy for 9 months instead of 2 years because that helped him beat up a person and there's some restorative justice involved. But Yoel Romero failed after he had fought somebody. So there was no implication that he had used PEDs to hurt anybody. And by giving him 9 months instead of 2 years like they did, it logically does not make sense. If you say to me, this man took something and cheated, he should get 2 years. If you say to me, this man did not know that he took something on that was tainted and he had no way of ever knowing, because it's unreasonable for us to expect any athlete to know and go through the process of like hiring a lab to test every single batch of supplements. Why is he being suspended? He did not do anything wrong. It's a lawyer in me, but we have what we call mens rea and actus rea. Actus rea is the action itself. Mens rea is the mindset behind it. And the very simple way to explain it is,
basically motive, right?
Kind of. It's like if you and I are sitting next to each other on a park bench and we both put down an identical briefcase, if I know that if I see yours and I say, I want that and I take it, I have committed the physical act of taking your briefcase and I knew it was yours. But if I take your briefcase on accident because it looks just like mine and I wasn't paying attention, I have not committed a crime because I did not mean to commit a crime.
Right.
And we rightfully do not punish people when they commit crimes on accident, because why would you punish someone for stealing something if they just thought, oh, I took my suitcase, I took my briefcase, it looks just like everybody else's on the Metro train or whatever. And so I think USADA is trying to play it every which way, and there's no real consistency. You know, you can be in China, you use tainted meat, and they say, well, you didn't mean to use tainted meat, no punishment. But if you're Yoel Romero, use a tainted supplement, and they say, well, you didn't mean to use a tainted supplement, but you're going to get 9 months.
Right.
I
still see it as some of it just being a new thing, and they're working out. There's going to be hiccups. Should BJ Penn be suspended at all? He took an IV that didn't have any illegal substances in it at all and got suspended for 6 months, and they didn't even catch him. He didn't test positive for anything. He just admitted to using an IV, whatever it was, fluids, whatever, vitamins. But it was something that wasn't prohibited. He didn't pop for anything, and he admitted to use. Kind of like the Machida deal, where they didn't test positive for anything, but they admitted using this stuff. The other one, too, that got some press this week was Krokop. He came out saying he feels like he got screwed over by the UFC. All his tests came back negative, and he got the same suspension as guys who tested positive. Granted, he admitted he used HGH for a shoulder injury, but he's basically arguing, similar to you, that USADA offered lower suspensions to certain guys for certain things, but not him, when he didn't even pop for anything. But to me, the bottom line with all of these cases and the inconsistencies is that it's new. All of these are the first time this has ever happened. There's going to be some issues and some things that are going to – you're going to scratch your head a little bit because it's never been done before.
Yeah. There is a learning – process, no doubt. There's a growth process behind all of this. However, if it's a learning process, they really should err on the side of the athlete's future.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're taking away, you know, a lifetime of earnings from some guys. You know, $200,000. I mean, or maybe half. Say some guy loses $500,000. That's enough to retire on for the rest of your life. Like if you invest that and get a 5% return, you're gonna get about $2,000 a month, something like that. Like that ain't bad. You could, you know, about $50,000 a year, even $25,000 a year. Not a great life, but it's decent enough. And for them to just be treating people differently from 1 month to another we kind of talked about it, I think, last week when we talked about scoring and all that. Like, you have to be consistent above all else. And maybe it's the lawyer in me. Fuck him. But I think that consistency matters more than anything.
Yeah. The bigger issue, though, is there's nothing to be consistent with because it's all still so new.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a difference between Penn and Crow Cop and Mirror, who's claiming kangaroo meat that he can't prove, and the next guy and the next guy. They're all just a little bit different. Usually when a guy gets popped, legit, it's 2 years, closed door. So, again, I mean, a lot of people aren't okay with the way it's going, but to me, I feel like they're legitimately doing the best they can. If you're against PEDs in MMA, they're trying to catch guys, and then when they do catch a guy, to a degree, they're hearing them out. Maybe the penalties aren't consistent yet, but I would think in a year they would be. Hopefully there would be some consistency. Maybe they'll change some of the wording and everything in the policy, and maybe it'll be a year for certain things and a little longer for something else. Like, if you commit first degree murder, it's a lot different than manslaughter. That sort of thing.
And you know, and that's
this time.
And that's true. And I think it's one of the things that, is a general rule, not just in MMA, but in life in general with the justice system and such. People need to understand that it's really about what happens in the long run. Like, one case does not matter. You try to create a system, and the system is what matters. And so, you know, it's kind of like looking at – this doesn't really work. A lot of people disagree, but so be it. Half will like it. You look at economics, and you can be like, oh, you have rampant capitalism. Oh, look at the Great Depression. But like, sure, there were 3 years there, but what about the other, you know, 97? Or versus communism, where it's like nothing ever worked. It was, you know, 100% failure. And it's the idea of fuck economics. That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't matter. To me, and I really do believe that it is better to let 10 guilty men go free than to imprison one innocent man. And
right.
Eventually, I think we will get to the point where they will figure it out. It saddens me to think they haven't thought through a lot of this stuff in advance, just because this is not a new issue. I remember, again, I'm 33. I was probably 20 when I first wrote about like steroids and all this stuff, and I didn't know, you know, half what I know now. There's been a lot of smart people who've known this for a long time. I mean, look at Marion Jones. She was cheating in 88 or whatever. Michael Johnson, whatever. The Canadian dude, 88, 92 or whatever. Like, people know how this shit works. This is not a new thing. But, so for them to act like, oh, we don't totally know what's going on. Like, we don't know if the guys are cheating this way or this way or this way or this way. It's like, yeah, you do. Like, people have always been cheating. And, you know, I mean, it's tough to condemn everyone. Like, I look at BJ Penn. Like, to me, BJ Penn was always clean. And part of that was just because he fought like shit in so many fights. I thought he has to be clean. But if he's taking, you know, an IV here and there, maybe, to me, that's either maybe he's really, really clean and he's trying to do this as best he can, or he's cheating. And yet, on the other hand, I remember Jeff Nowitzki, the head of the UFC's compliance division, saying that if Penn had gone to a hospital and gotten the exact same thing done, nobody would have ever known and it would have been fine. And that would have been okay during training. Now, I can see why guys would not want to go to a hospital after they weigh in, because that might set off a red flag for an athletic commission. But 8 weeks out from a fight, there'd be no problem with doing it. And so for somebody to say that it's kind of weird to me where, and but at the same time, I know what he's saying. He's saying, if a guy is going to hospital, we know that those doctors are just not going to be covering anything up. They're just going to be doing normal medical stuff, whereas some guy at the gym might be different. But it also kind of advantages the wealthier athletes because, I mean, if I have a lot of money and I live in New Mexico with Greg Jackson, there's only, like, I don't know, one hospital in New Mexico. And so you can just be like, hey, Joe, are you on duty right now? Yeah. Okay. Here's, you know, $500 in a ringside seat. Let's do the test. Let's, you know, fill me up with an IV. And, but, and that's not new. I mean, Jeff Monson, who, you know, despite having both an anarchy and a hammer and sickle on his torso, which are the most, you know, diametrically opposed philosophical, ideologies you can have, made a very good point, which is
complicated man.
Yeah. I think he's basically an idiot, but, he pointed out, and it's true, which is, the stronger the testing, the more it favors the wealthier, richer fighters, because poor guys have to use horse shit, basically, if you will, or horse tranquilizers, horse steroids, and rich guys like Barry Bonds, who never has cheated, for the record, as a Giants fan, but Roger Clemens or whatever, Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire, they can afford to pay somebody to develop designer steroids, and so it's kind of unfair in that, you know, the rich get richer, but at the same time, there's also an argument to say that they became rich because they were so great. So I don't really have a good answer to it other than just keep plugging away and do your best. And hopefully they have the right people in place that are going to do their best.
I think they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
On that note, we're about 90 minutes in.
Oh, yeah.
No major shows this weekend. You've got the weekend off. Saturday, obviously, we've got UFC 202 coming up.
Is that next Saturday?
I'm watching fights and typing them out. Is that? Yeah, 202's on the 20th, I believe.
August
20th. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So the Condit Damian Maya is the weekend after that. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a Fox card or something. Right?
By the way, if anybody Googles UFC 202 results, you will see halfguarded.com on the first page of Google, motherfuckers. That's right. We are gaming the system.
Again, no shows this week. Weekend. We've got 202 next weekend. Probably try and do a preview for that sometime next week.
Oh, for sure.
Obviously, you got McGregor Diaz, huge fight. What else is on there? Cowboy, Rick Story. And there's one other big fight, which I'm drawing a blank on, the co-main.
Anthony Johnson and Glover Teixeira.
Oh, yeah, and Glover. It's
a good show. It's, we'll talk about it in 7 days from now and do an amazing preview, and you'll pick all the good people and I'll pick the losers and try to defend it. But I've been working on this idea in my head, and there's something about Conor McGregor versus everybody else in MMA except for maybe Ronda, which is when Conor fights, it doesn't matter. He has that ability to draw you in and say, this is special. And even if I know that he's not special, even if some part of me is like, yeah, he's a really good, you know, featherweight, but he ain't the greatest of all time and all this shit. He lost to, like, you know, a halfway decent lightweight. He has that big fight feel to him. And, I don't know, like, how can you not want to watch Conor McGregor fight? Like, it's fucking Conor McGregor. It doesn't matter. Like, it's going to be something great, and the first fight was an awesome spectacle, and this fight will be too, and we'll talk about it in a week, and I should stop talking about it. Yeah. So Matt closes out, and when you say goodbye, I will hang up, and then the show will be over. So take us home and plug shit and all that.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. Stay away from tainted meat, GMOs, lawyers. Does that cover it? Pro wrestlers. And we'll see you next week.
Eat more GMO. Bye!
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about.
We hope you enjoy your stay. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for